Well, hello again, and welcome to the Judy Garland and Friends podcast. I've been wanting to bring this podcast to you for a long, long, long time. It's an outgrowth of my podcast, which is the Jack Benny Show OTR podcast, where I run a lot of shows. And one of the shows that I would run was Judy Garland, chronologically, from her first appearances in radio all the way up through all of her appearances in radio. She had dozens and dozens and dozens of appearances, and they're so wonderful the way they capture her and the way that film doesn't always capture her and the way her television show didn't. A young Judy Garland, full of vitality, full of energy. And so this is just a great way to present it to you. And I decided to start presenting it through these podcasts. Mindy started introducing them for me over on my podcast, and she was doing such a phenomenal job. I just wanted these to get out there to more people that were Judy Garland fans. So we'll be running Mindy's Judy Garland podcast, where she's presenting Judy Garland chronologically through time, starting with the earliest surviving recordings we have. We'll bring them to you in the best quality sound we can find. Also, we'll be presenting shows that she would be on and friends of hers, like the Bing Crosby Show, Command Performance, things like this. So I hope you're going to enjoy it. Please email me at buckbennyotr@gmail.com if you'd like to chat about Judy Garland and some of the shows you'd like us to present and things. Anyway, without further ado, here's Mindy to introduce our first episode of Judy Garland podcast. Enjoy.
So dynamic, so magnetic, so effervescent, so full of energy and vitality.
Is it Herman?
No.
Is it Sherman?
No.
Is it Eddie? Is it Freddie?
Oh, no, no, no.
Is it Hart? Is it Shatner? Is it March, perhaps?
Oh, you'll never, never guess it. Don't snap your cap.
It's just Miss Judy Garland.
Here's the little gal who's earned a number one priority in your pinup department, both in your barracks wall and in your heart, Judy Garland.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. From the moment I saw him, I fell.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Old Time Radio. This is Mindy of the Stacy and Mindy team that you may have gotten to know a little bit over the last couple of months. I am flying solo for the first time. Stacy, however, is still going to be around. No one panic. Your ray of sunshine isn't going to go anywhere. She's still going to be doing the Phil Harris and Alice Faye show, and I believe probably teaming up with some other podcasters to do introductions on different shows in the coming months. So, no one panic. Buck has put together a series of Judy Garland appearances that stretch over different shows, and it's looking like these are kind of going to be early on in her career, and I'm really looking forward to listening to all of these and kind of pairing it up with what I've been reading about her career and her personal life through that time frame, and hopefully have some good information to share with you. It's been fun so far. This episode is November 16th, 1935, broadcast of the Shell Chateau. And no, I can't say it three times fast. I can barely say it slow the first time. The Shell Chateau show. And this, from what I read, was kind of near the end of its run. It was a short-lived program. And this particular episode was hosted by Wallace Beery, who was a well-known actor with MGM. And we come into Judy's career right when she signs on with MGM. And she had actually had an appearance back in October of the same year. So within 1 month, she's had two appearances on the radio, and she's also signed her MGM contract. She's 12 years old. You couldn't tell just by listening to her sing. But you can tell when she talks, which the juxtaposition of that was just so charming, because that voice is so recognizable, and then when she starts to speak to Wallace Beery, she's clearly a child. And it was kind of a fun difference to hear. But she does a fantastic job singing Zing with the Strings of My Heart, which became a staple for her, one of her well-known songs. And she just sings the love out of it. It is just fantastic. And it's particularly poignant in her life, looking back on it, I believe, too, because her father, Frank Gum, and actually her birth name is Frances Gum. She was named after her father. He had went to the hospital with kind of a sudden onset spinal meningitis, and they set up a radio and he was able to listen to her sing, and it just kind of came on so quickly and so poor. Yeah, his health just deteriorated so quickly out of nowhere. And she's referred to that, his passing that same day or later that day. She's referred to that as, you know, obviously the worst thing that ever happened to her. And then I was reading in a biography of hers, she said, "The terrible thing about it was that I wasn't able to cry at my father's funeral. I was ashamed that I couldn't cry, but I just couldn't cry for 8 days, and then I locked myself in a bathroom and cried for 14 hours. And I've always admired her and her career and her talent, but that's the first time I've actually related to her as one daughter to another. I lost my father when I was 18, so I was a little bit older when it happened to me. Little more maturity probably to handle it, but I went through the same exact kind of sequence of events. You get through these horrible times in your life and there's so much going on and there's so many people to talk to. And in her case, she had so many professional obligations, I'm sure, in this like budding new career that she was setting out on, and it probably took that long to get enough time to herself to have it fully impact her and actually grieve in her own way, in her own time. I experienced that myself, so I felt a bit of a kinship there reading that. It was a little bit heartbreaking, but by no means let that weigh you down. Everybody still, you know, has their things in life that are just incredibly difficult, and this was a time in hers that obviously affected her deeply, but she sang her heart out for her dad. And he was able to hear it, and it's just a really kind of touching and sweet time in her life and career that I was really happy to hear about and read about. So I hope you enjoy it. It's the Shel Chateau show. It's the first time I've listened to it. It's a bit of an odd format for me and my taste, but to kind of have a jumble of things in there. But the musical numbers from all the guests are really fantastic, and, you know, everything else is, you know, effective in its own varying degrees, but definitely appreciate this kind of national treasure we have here in the earliest recording of Judy Garland on the radio, 12 years old. Hope everybody enjoys it.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The makers of Super Shell Gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is Wallace Beery with an all-star bill of famous guest stars. We switch you now to Shell Chateau, where you'll be greeted by Wallace Beery.
Well, 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 here we go again. This is the keeper of the old Shell Chateau. I've been away duck hunting all week up in Portland, Oregon. I come back and find that the boys all own dinner clothes. Very unusual. I look very much at home with the clothes that I have on. Well, looks like we're knee-deep in celebrities tonight. They're all going to be in the show, too. For instance, over there is Big Bill Tilden. You know Big Bill. Why, he's the greatest tennis player in the United States today. And over there next to him is an old friend of Bill's. He's a famous authority on music. His name is Sigmund Spaeth. You probably know him as the tune detective, whatever that is. And who do you think that we've got sitting over there? Patsy Kelly. Yes, sir. You can see her now in the new Dick Powell picture in, I think it's called Thanks a Million. Tonight, we're very, very happy to have her with us. We're also very glad to welcome Alan Jones here. He's a young singer who made such a hit in the Marx Brothers' new picture, A Night at the Opera. We've got another celebrity here this evening, a young fellow named Victor Young. That's the fellow standing right in back of me with the stick right there. The stick is to use with the band, not on me. A little later on, we're going to present a one-act play called The Valiant.
I'll tell you more about that a little bit later. Now, the little lady standing here beside me isn't exactly a celebrity yet. She's only 12 years old. She probably won't be famous all maybe for a couple of years. Her name is Judy Garland. And I'm sure that you remember her singing here about 4 weeks ago. Well, since her last appearance here, she signed a 7-year contract with the MGM studio. Isn't that great, guy? And the minute she was signed, Sam Katz wrote her into his new picture, Yours and Mine. I knew that Judy would make good. The last time she was here, she was so gorgeous that everybody said to me, Wally, why, you've got to have that little Judy Garland back again. So here she is, and I'll tell you right now that we're very proud of her. Wait until you hear her sing. All right, Judy, whip along.
Self-control. for all the other things he's done for me.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, Judy. I bet your mother's proud of you, too. Isn't that your small kitchen right down there in the front row?
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think my mother would care if I gave you a great big hug?
Well, I don't know what she'd think, but maybe that little Carol Ann of mine, Mother Jack, would go ahead. Thanks, Judy. That's awfully pretty good. Now, come on, just a little bitty, teeny-weeny encore, huh? Go ahead.
You swing slightly, heard a melody, you haunted me from the start. Something inside of me started a symphony, you sing with the strings of my heart. Was like a breath of spring, I heard a robin sing, loud and set apart. All nature seemed to be in perfect harmony, sing with the strings of my heart. Your eyes make I see blue again. What else could I do again but keep repeating through and through? I love you, I still recall the thrill, gifts that I always will, I hope to never depart. Here with your lips to mine, breath to keep divine, sing ho, 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 with the strings of my heart.
Isn't that marvelous? A child 12 years old, now that she's with MGM, I hope they give me the opportunity of being able to support her in a picture someday. Well, come on, Willie, you're next. Our next guest is the greatest tennis player in the world, Big Bill Tilden. If you think I'm large, look at Willie. He started winning tennis tournaments about 15 years ago. He won his latest title last month. He's now the professional champion of the United States. It's great having him with us here tonight in Shell Chateau, and here he is in person, Bill Tilden. Hey, Bill. Wait until I step up a little bit. Gee, but you're looking great. You haven't changed in all the years that I've known you.
Yeah, you still look the same to me, too, Wally. You know the first time I ever saw you?
No, I don't remember that.
Well, it was a picture you made. You played King Richard and Robin Hood. I can still remember the big banquet scene, which you were sitting at a table gnawing on the biggest bone I ever saw in my life. It must have been 2 feet long.
I can remember that scene. All the dogs in the place were jealous of me. Bill, I wish you'd straighten me out on some of those titles of yours. You know, in 1920, well, of course, I was too little to go to the tournament then, you know. I was too little.
Yeah, well, I won the first national amateur about 1920 from Billy Johnston. After that, I won it 5 more times succession.
That's 6 times running altogether?
Yeah. I won it once more in 1929. Got licked in 1930 and turned pro.
Well, you won a lot of tournaments in England during those years, too, didn't you, Bill?
Well, I won 3 times at Wimbledon. Say, I think the most embarrassing moment of my life was at Wimbledon.
Yeah? What was that, Bill?
Well, there was an enormous crowd that day. In the royal box was the Queen of England, Princess Mary, and the Duke of York, King of Spain, really quite a lot of lesser nobility, watching the match. The third set, I was dashing across the court after a fast ball. The cartilage in my knee slipped out of place. You know I have a trick knee?
I know you got a knee, but I didn't know it did tricks, Bill, though.
Yeah, well, I slid right down under the royal box and sat down, and my knee knocked. Yeah, there I was, sitting in the most undignified position, right in front of the Queen and completely powerless to move. The dilemma I was facing was this. Should I have myself carried off the court and default the match, or pull up the trouser leg and expose a large portion of American leg to the Queen of England and push the cartilage back? Well, I finally rolled up the trouser, but I'm afraid it was a serious faux pas.
Well, did the Queen peep a little bit?
Definitely and automatically.
Tell me, Bill, what was the most exciting match you ever played?
Well, I guess the most exciting match is the one I played with Ellie Vines down here at Los Angeles. But certainly the longest, 3 hours and 40 minutes. Second set was 21-19. You know, we went on the court at 9 o'clock at night and finished at 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah, I'll bet that you were all tired, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, Vines and I had been scheduled to play a doubles match after the singles, but by the time we finished, well, of course, we were so exhausted, we practically had to be carried from the court. However, just as I was staggering to the dressing room, I got a terrific slap on the back. I turned around, and there was Charlie Chaplin. He looked at me and yelled, "What? No doubles?"
Well, who won the match? You or Vines?
Yeah, Vines won it. 5 sets.
All right. But why don't you tell us about some match where you beat Vines?
Yeah, that's a little hard to do. There, few and far between. I did beat him once, first match we played. I never played him as an amateur. Vines had just turned pro. You say we had 18,000 people in Madison Square Garden to watch it.
Well, tell me this, Bill. You've played with all the finest players in the world now. Who would you say are the 4 best players alive today?
You mean on their records or just my opinion of them?
Well, on your opinion, that's all.
Well, I think that Ellsworth Vines is undoubtedly the best player in the world today. I'd say the next player, now at his best, Wally, mind you, is Gottfried von Kramm of Germany. Von Kramm's an amateur.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rank Hans Nussline, the German professional, 3rd, and after that, Fred Perry. Although, of course, on record, Fred would outrank von Kramm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting list, Bill. It's very modest of you to leave the top man out, you know. How'd you rank the 5 best American players?
Well, I'll give you the 5 who, in my opinion, are the leading American amateurs on record.
Okay.
Number 1, Wilmer Allison. Number 2, Sidney Wood. Number 3, Bitsy Grant. Number 4, Donald Budge. And number 5, Frank Shields.
Doesn't say anything about Wally Berry there, did you?
No.
Well, now, suppose you figured the American professionals in that list, too. Why, how would the list run then?
Say, why don't we have a tournament between the pros and the amateurs and find out? That's the only way you can figure it.
Yeah, I see. Well, listen, who do you think is the most promising youngsters in the game?
Well, the boy I think's probably going farthest is Donald Budge of San Francisco.
Well,
you know, he's really got a lot. He has something very few of the boys have, and that's a real serious desire to study the game and know what it's about. Most kids, 17, 18, decide to know all about the game. They really have a long way to go. You know, I thought Budge had a chance to win the American Championship this year.
Well, he's red-headed, and that helps a lot, you know. Well, what advice would you give to young fellows, you know, that just want to learn the game? Don't look at me.
Well, I think I'd tell a kid to play tennis because it's a game he can take with him out of school into business life. The better he plays it, the more fun he'll have out of it. And after all, you know, all you need to do is to watch the ball till you hit it. Be sure you turn sideways to the net or your weight goes into the stroke. And just remember, Wally, that the gut of the racket is what you're supposed to hit the ball with, not the wood.
Thanks, Wally. Thank you for coming on.
Have you ever driven your automobile behind a trolley car?
You're caught behind a trolley car. You can't go around on your left. And you're pinned in by cars on your right. You can only move along with the trolley car. You stop and start when it does. It's stop-and-go driving at its worst, and it's very aggravating. But actually, you're doing this kind of driving 80% of the time. 4 out of every 5 miles you drive are right near home, short trips around town. And even these short trips are broken by traffic stops. You're starting, shifting, and accelerating almost all the time. Now, this kind of driving calls for a special kind of gasoline. Otherwise, it's very expensive driving. With ordinary gasoline, you can use up enough on a single cold start or on just 3 quick getaways to carry you a whole mile. But now you can cut down this waste. Simply use Super Shell. It's the first gasoline specially adapted to stop-and-go driving. Super Shell gives you the 3 kinds of power you need in just the right proportions. Power for quick starting, power for fast pickup, and power for long, steady driving. You use up less gas on all the starting and accelerating you do. So naturally, each tankful lasts longer. But see for yourself. Begin using Super Shell tomorrow.
Now, Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner. Shell Chateau's own duet team. They're going to sing a song from my favorite operetta, Apple Blossom. The song is called You Are Free. All right.
in the air, flying with never a care, wandering about like evening breeze through the trees where we please.
Love is the tyrant.
To present you one of the grandest girls in Hollywood, Patsy Kelly. She's one of the sweetest, nicest girls in the motion picture industry. Besides that, she's very cultured, dignified, and refined. Tonight, Miss Kelly will be interviewed by a writer for our fan magazine right here in Shell Chateau. Here she is, Patsy Kelly.
Well, how do you do, Miss Kelly?
Oh, hiya, Turk.
Evidently, you didn't hear your introduction.
Oh, no, I was talking to that boy over there at the door. Say, he's cute. That's some uniform he's got on.
Miss
you
Kelly,
know
when we were introduced...
Oh, so we were introduced. That's funny. I thought I knew you.
Why? Is my face familiar?
No, but I bet it would like to be.
I was speaking of our introduction here in Shell Chateau. When Mr. Berry introduced you, he said you were very refined.
Oh, I thought he was talking about the gasoline. I'm sorry.
No, no, Miss Kelly. I have a few questions. No. You see, I have a few questions I would like to ask you.
All right.
I'm a gentleman of the press.
Oh, a tailor, eh?
No. No, no, I'm a writer, a fan writer.
A fan? Oh, go on. They only use those things for dancing.
No, no. I mean, I'm a writer on the fan magazine.
Well, now, that's settled. I'm pleased to meet you. What's your name?
Gates. The initial is V.
Oh, I get it. V. Gates. Very good. Very good.
No,
very
no, Miss Kelly. No, not V. Gates. V. Gates is a German phrase meaning, how do you feel?
Oh,
my name is Victor. That's the initial V.
Well, you interest me strangely, Vic. Tell me more.
Well, I'm interviewing you, Miss Kelly, so you must tell me a few things. You know, I've always considered you one of the big figures in pictures.
Now, wait a minute. Don't get personal. Did you come here to interview me or to insult me?
I'm sorry, but when I said big figure, I was...
Sort of figuratively speaking.
That's it.
I know, yes.
Now, I think that your fans would like to know a few things about you. Tell me, Miss Kelly, what is your nationality? From your name, I should say you're either Celtic or Gaelic.
Well, you're wrong again. I'm Irish and Scotch.
But your folks are all in this country now, aren't they, Miss Kelly?
Yeah, all but one. I have an uncle in Scotland whom I've never seen.
Well, you know what they say about the Scotch.
Oh, he's not so stingy. He sent me his photograph last week.
Well, that was nice of him. Is it a good picture?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had it developed yet.
Well, tell me, Miss Kelly, how do you like Hollywood?
Oh, I'm crazy about Hollywood. Why, the homes out here are so beautiful, and they're so big, and they look so grand out there in the hills.
Yes, there is nothing like a view from those hills. I suppose you live up there yourself, don't you?
Oh, I have a little house, 60 rooms, but it has a beautiful view. Why, on a clear day, I can see the mortgage falling due at least 3 payments away.
Well, how long have you been in Hollywood, Miss Kelly?
Oh, I've been in Hollywood now, let me see, about 1 year and 3 options.
Well, Miss Kelly, you have a piece of bandage on your finger. You didn't hurt yourself, did you?
No, you see, the girl I live with, she wanted me to mail a letter for her, and she just put this on my finger so I'd remember.
And did you mail the letter?
No, she forgot to give it to me.
Oh, so you live with another girl.
Yeah, you know, she's having her troubles, too. She's running around with one of those what do you call them, jigger?
Oh, you mean a gigolo?
Yeah, you know, one of those fellows who think the world owes them a loving.
Oh. I suppose you have a lot of boyfriends, too, haven't you, Miss Kelly?
Well, now, surprising it may seem, I haven't.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I get pretty lonesome at times. You know, I also wish I was back in Chicago so I could be nearer my family.
Is that where they live?
Oh, no, they're in New York.
You know, Miss Kelly, there's something I admire about you very much.
Oh, really? Yeah. What's
well,
that?
The way you talk about your family and the fact that you lead such a nice, quiet life. You don't smoke or drink. I wish my brother was like that.
Why? What's the matter with your brother?
Well, he's always out on wild parties and he feels terrible when he gets up in the morning.
Well, maybe that's because he gets up on the wrong side of the floor. Those things happen.
Oh, no. No, you see, my brother was what you might call a problem child.
Oh, that's funny. My sister has a problem child.
What's she doing about him?
Well, that's her problem, not mine. I have my own trouble.
Well, what I mean is what seems to be the trouble with him.
Well, for instance, the other day he came home from school and he said that he wouldn't go back to school anymore unless she would buy him an encyclopedia, no less.
And did your sister buy him an encyclopedia?
She most certainly did not. She said he could walk to school like all the rest of the kids.
Well,
Nothing fancy about the Kellys.
To get back to our interview, Miss Kelly, have you seen any of the big football games out here this season?
Have I? Say, I never miss a game. You know, I come from quite a great football family myself.
You don't say.
Oh, yes.
I suppose then that some of your brothers play football.
Why, I have one brother who's the greatest football player in the country.
That's interesting. What position does he play?
He plays huddle, and boy, is he a huddler.
Now, Miss Kelly, wait a minute. You know that's not possible. How can one man hold a huddle? Why, that takes a whole team.
Well, he's a one-man team.
Say, I think you're trying to kid me. You know, I know a few things, too.
Oh, yeah? Well, I know just as few as you do. Remember?
All right. Well, just what else does your brother do besides hold a huddle?
Well, he's a great blocker, one of the best. And he also plays end and guard.
What do you mean, end and guard?
He sits on the end of the bench and guards the water bucket. Very good.
And you call that a great football player?
Why, he's the most colorful player that ever lived.
What do you mean, the most colorful?
Well, he's got a great coat of tan, and he's always in the pinker condition, but not too pink. He hasn't got a yellow streak in him, and when he goes out there on the field, the other players turn green with envy. He gets so mad he sees red, and the opposing team is purple with rage. After the game, he's always black and blue, but boy, he certainly does things up brown.
Well, Miss Kelly, I've been following football for a long time, and I've heard of all the great players. There's Jim Thorpe of Carlisle, Ernie Nevers of Stanford, and Reg Grange of Illinois.
And you never heard of Cross-Eyed Kelly of Pennsylvania, eh?
Is that your brother?
No.
Well, who is your brother, and what team does he play on?
He's with the Notorious Dames.
Notorious Dames? By any chance, do you mean Notre Dame?
Well, Notre Dame, Boulder Dam, who gives a darn? Ha-ha, fooled you that time. Well,
alone, alone with a sky of romance above.
whisper goodbye, my love.
You hear that voice? That's the voice of Alan Jones. Alan's a young fellow who came out here to Hollywood less than a year ago. He's already made more than good in pictures. He's really a marvelous singer, and I want you to hear him. His first song is called Alone. Down and use that famous word. Well, that was great, Alan. I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, boy, this boy is going ahead fast. 2 years ago, he was nothing but a grand opera singer. Now he's with the Marx Brothers. All right, Alan, give us another one. Just another one. Just one more. Okay.
The song is yours. Land, down deep in my heart, I hear.
About All-American fullbacks and gasoline.
Any day now, you'll begin seeing lists of All-American football players. You'll read that so-and-so of Notre Dame, so-and-so of Princeton, and so-and-so of California are top because they can do extra well all three of the things a backfield player has to do. They can pass, they can kick, and they can run. They're great all-around players. Now, you need a gasoline that's like that, too. An all-around gasoline. If you don't have it, you're bound to spend more than what's necessary for gasoline. Because, you see, on today's stop-and-go driving, you're starting, shifting, and accelerating at least as much as you're driving along. Super Shell is this all-around gasoline that you've been needing. It is the first gasoline specially adapted to stop-and-go driving. Super Shell gives you the three kinds of power you need in perfect balance. Power for quick starting, power for fast pickup and hill climbing, and power for long, steady driving. Super Shell saves on your innumerable starts and getaways. Try using it for a while and you'll see. Super Shell gives noticeably better mileage.
Patsy Kelly, Bill Tilden, Judy Garland, Alan Jones, and Sigmund Space. Victor Young is here, too, as usual. Right now, he's going to play some tunes from Thanks a Million in honor of Patsy Kelly. Go ahead, Victoire.
Thank you.
I don't like to interrupt the program, but here's a beautiful bouquet of flowers which some friends of Patsy Kelly sitting out here in front have just sent into you. Come here, Patsy, and get them. That's for your lovely act tonight, Patsy. Well, our next guest is Sigmund Space. He's one of those, one of those educated fellows. He gives lectures on music, and he knows all about Chopin and a lot of those names that I can't pronounce. He knows all about them. The thing that's really made him famous is his work as a tune detective. It's a man, maybe you don't know what a tune detective is, but it's a man that hears a tune, and he knows right away just exactly where the writer or where he borrowed it from. I'm mighty happy to have him here in Shell Chateau tonight. Here he is. Sigmund Space.
Thank you very much, Wally. I think perhaps that word borrowed is a little bit strong. You know, there isn't anything intentional about this borrowing of tunes most of the time. In fact, the tune detective isn't really a criminologist at all. He simply tries to trace the popular tunes to their lair, you might say. Sometimes he finds several lairs in the background. For instance, one of those tunes you've been getting a little sick of lately, perhaps, is that one about the little gypsy tea room. Well, the boys who wrote that tune say that they got it from the verse part of the La Cucaracha. But I think they forgot one, that one about the tree in the park. And then that little phrase, you might trace it back to that classic opera Il Trovatore. And perhaps that middle part. Well, you slow that up and you get that funeral music in Grieg's Peer Gynt. Well, that's just a little sample. Perhaps you'd like me to go through a whole tune and show you how you can trace perhaps every line of one of the less recent ones. The one I have in mind is by my friend Irving Berlin, the one called Say It Isn't So. Well, when I first heard Say It Isn't So, I said it wasn't so, but it was so. The fact of the matter is that the chorus of Say It Isn't So has about six other tunes in it, I think mostly unintentional. Mr. Berlin started like this. That little ornament is really just decoration. That's all it is. The tune itself is down here. And right there, Mr. Berlin may have been influenced by a couple of tunes that were popular at the time. First, Dancing in the Dark. And Just a Gigolo. Two perfectly good backgrounds to start with. Dancing in the Dark, Just a Gigolo. And then he goes on with this. Now there, Mr. Berlin is borrowing, first of all, from himself, because years ago he wrote a tune called The Ragtime Violin, starting with the word, fiddle up on your violin. The second phrase was, play right on it, recitation upon it. And that not only turns up again in Say It Isn't So, but it takes us back to another old friend. Mighty Like a Rose, Sweetest Little Fella, you all know it. And then, of course, he comes back again by way of Dancing in the Dark and Just a Gigolo. And finally arrives at this climax, which goes back to an old-timer called Just a Little Love, a Little Kiss. And with a touch of April Showers, he ends with Can't We Be Friends? Now, if you'd like, I think I might run through that chorus again and just show you how it would sound if you sang all the original words throughout. You'd get a rather funny effect, something like this, instead of Say It Isn't So. Dancing in the dark, dancing in the dark. Fiddle up and play your violin, but say it isn't so. Just a gigolo, just a gigolo. Whisper that you're growing tired of me, say it isn't so. Dancing in the dark, just a gigolo. sweetest little fella. Everybody knows he's mighty like a rose. Just a little love, a little kiss, and so the story ends with April showers. And we be friends.
Thank you, Sigmund. Thank you. You know, one thing that we try to do here in Shell Chateau the last few weeks is to give talented people a chance to show their stuff. It made me very happy the way that you folks have enjoyed the work of Judy Garland and some of the other people that we have given an opportunity in the shows. Tonight, I'm going to present a girl who's not a singer, but a dramatic actress. Her name is Faye Helm. She came here to Hollywood less than 3 months ago from Bakersfield, California. She's never done any professional stage work. She's never been on the radio. And she never saw a movie camera in her life. But I think she's got a lot of talent, and I'm proud to present her tonight playing the lead opposite me, Miss Faye Helm. Come on, Faye. Now, you stand right here by me, Faye, and did I tell any little stories of one or two?
Well, I saw a newsreel camera in Bakersfield once.
And you'd make a storyteller out of me for that, huh?
No.
Well, Faye, I wish you all the success in the world. I want you to do your best. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Faye and I will present the famous one-act play, The Valiant. The Valiant is a story of a man condemned to death. He has confessed his crime, but he has refused to reveal his real name or to give any clue to his identity. He is known to the prison authorities as James Dyke. Dyke is to go to the electric chair in a few moments. But as the 0 hour approaches, a girl comes to the prison, convinced that the condemned man is her brother. She has been given permission to see him and is now entering the warden's office.
Come in. Hello, miss. You've come to see James Dyke.
Yes, sir.
Come in and sit down, please. Now, young lady, you think Dyke may be your brother?
Yes, sir.
How long is it since you've seen your brother?
Since I was a little girl.
How do you think you're going to recognize him? Suppose he doesn't want to be recognized by you or anybody else.
Oh, I've thought of that. I'm just going to talk to him, ask him questions about things he and I used to do together. I'll watch his face. And if he's my brother, oh, I'm sure I can tell.
What did you and your brother ever used to do that would help you out now?
He used to play games with me when I was a little girl and tell me stories. That's what I'm counting on mostly, the stories.
I'm afraid.
Especially Shakespeare stories.
Shakespeare?
Yes. He used to get the plots of the plays, all the Shakespeare plays. And then he'd tell me the stories in his own words. It was wonderful.
I'm certainly afraid.
But best of all, he'd learn some of the speeches from the plays themselves. Oh, he liked to do it. He was sure he was going to be an actor. He was in all the high school plays, always. And then he'd teach some of the speeches to me, and we'd say them to each other. And one thing, every night he'd sit on the side of my bed. And when I got sleepy, there were two speeches we'd always say to each other, like good night. Two speeches out of Romeo and Juliet. And then I'd go to sleep. I used to say, good night, good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow. And then he'd say, sleep dwell upon thine eyes. Peace in thy breast. Would I were sleep in peace. So sweet to them.
So that's Shakespeare, huh?
Yes. If he knows those lines, he's my brother.
This man never heard of Shakespeare, much less learned them. But I'll let you see him for yourself. Only you might as well be prepared. Come in. Here he is now. Dyke, this is the young lady that summoned for Father Steele.
Yes, sir.
And this is Father Daly, miss. He's our chaplain.
How do you do, Father?
How do you do, miss? I hope you'll be able to get the information you want from my friend, the prisoner here. Come along, Warden. I think we may safely leave these two alone for a few moments.
Thanks, Father.
All right, Dyke.
Mother sent me to see you.
Yes?
You see, we haven't seen or heard of my brother Joe for ever so long. And Mother thought, after what we read in the papers...
That I might be your brother Joe?
Yes, that's it.
Well, you can easily see that I'm not your brother, can't you?
Well, I'm not sure. You look a little like him, just as the picture in the paper did. But then again, it's so long, and I thought of Joe so differently.
As a matter of fact, I couldn't be your brother or anybody else's brother because I never had a sister. So I guess that settles that.
Honestly?
Honestly. You don't think I'd tell a lie at this stage of the game?
No, I don't believe you would. Did you ever want to be an actor?
No. Never.
Do you know any poetry?
Poetry?
Yes. Thou knowest the mask of night is on my face. Else would a maiden blush betaint my cheek. For that which... Oh, don't you know what that is?
No. No. To tell the truth, it sounds rather silly to me. Doesn't it to you?
Oh, no. Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night. Till it be morrow. What comes next?
I don't know.
Oh, you're not Joe, are you? I had to come and find out, though. I hope I haven't made you too unhappy.
You're not going now?
Yes, I promised to... Is he the warden, that man in there?
Yes.
I said I'd go right away if you weren't my brother. And you aren't, so...
You're going back to your mother?
Yes.
I'm surprised that he'd send a girl like you on such an errand as this instead of coming herself.
She's very ill.
Oh, that's too bad.
Most of all, it's from worrying about Joe.
Still, when you tell her that her son isn't a murderer, at least that he isn't this one, why, that will comfort her a great deal, won't it?
Well, yes, I think maybe it will. Only...
Only what?
Well, I don't think Mother will ever be really well again. Until she finds out for certain where Joe is and what's become of him.
Mothers ought not to be treated like that. I wish I'd treated mine better. By the way, you didn't tell me what your name is.
Josephine Power.
And your brother's name was Joseph?
Yes. They used to call us Joe and Josie. That's funny, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's so funny. I sort of like it.
Well, what's the matter?
I was thinking of something. Now, what on earth was that fellow's name? It was a boy. What was his name now? Wait a minute. Don't tell me. Wait a minute. I've got it. Joseph Anthony Paris.
Well, that's his name. That's Joe.
Wait.
How did you ever...
Listen carefully to what I have to say and don't interrupt me. Because we've only got a minute. And I want you to get this all straight that you can go back and tell your mother. When the war came along, why, I enlisted and I was overseas for 4 years with the Canadians. Early one morning, we'd staged the big trench raid. There was an officer who'd been wounded. He was coming back and he was lying out there between the lines under fire. Well, all of a sudden, a young fellow dashed out of a trench not far from where I was, and he went out after that officer. The chances were just about 1,000,000 to 1 against him. He must have known it, but he went out just the same. He gathered up that officer in his arms, and he started back. He'd only gone a few yards when a shell landed right on top of the two of them. Afterwards, why, We got his identification tag. That was the name. Joseph Anthony Paris.
Oh.
If that was your brother's name, then you can go back and tell your ma that he died like a brave man and a soldier.
Oh, Joe. My brother Joe dead. And you were there and saw it.
I was there and saw it, yeah. It certainly ought to make your mother happy when she knows that her boy died as a soldier, not the criminal.
Oh, yes, yes, it will.
And does it make you happy?
Oh, yes, so happy. After what we were both afraid of. Oh, and yet, I'm so sorry for you. So truly sorry. I wish I only could do something to make you a tiny bit happier, too. Is there anything I could do?
Yes, there is only.
Oh, what is it?
Well, I can't tell you. I shouldn't even have let myself think of it.
Oh, please tell me. I want you to. For Joe's sake, tell me what I can do.
Well, in all the months that I've been in the city place, you're the first girl that I've seen. I've been terribly lonesome tonight. And if you really want to do something for me, that is for your brother's sake. You see, you're going to leave me in just a minute. I haven't any sister of my own or anybody else to say goodbye to me. So if you could really say goodbye, if you could, just kiss me, would you?
Yes.
Goodbye. God bless you.
Good night. Goodbye.
What is it?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I was thinking what I used to say to my brother for good night. If I only could have said it to him just once more for goodbye.
What was it?
I told it to you before. You said it was silly.
Oh, please, say it again.
Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow. Goodbye.
Sleep dwell upon mine eyes, peace in thy breast. Would I were sleep in peace, so sleep to rest.
Come, my boy.
Is it time, Father?
Yes, it's time.
Listen, Father. Cowards die many times before their death. The valiant never taste of death but once.
It's time now. Time to go.
My son.
All right. Let's go. Father, you walk with me.
I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills.
The valiant never taste of death but once.
From whence cometh my help?
The valiant never taste of death but once.
My help cometh from the Lord.
The valiant never taste of death but once.
Why don't you get the saving that Supershell gasoline can give you? A tank full of Supershell lasts longer because you use less of it on all that starting and accelerating we have to do nowadays. You can get Supershell everywhere at more than 30,000 neighborly Shell stations from coast to coast.
That's all for tonight, I guess, folks. Well, of course, I'd like to keep the show going for a couple of hours. But anyway, I know you'll all be back in Shell Chateau again next week. Next week, we're going to have that great comedian, Georgie Jessel. Fred Frame, one of the auto racers, the winner of the Indianapolis Speedway, and Helen Jepson of the Metropolitan Opera. Good night.
Musical selections.